This episode of LedgerCast is brought to you by Brave New Coin. Go to ledgerstatus.com/BNC to check out Brave New Coin and BNC Pro. This is a brand new platform. It's launching just in the next couple of months, where you can manage your entire crypto portfolio and get accurate market value, profit and loss positions at a glance. You can manage trades automatically by linking exchanges. You save a lot of time with this. It's a terminal-like experience that has charting, it has news, and a lot of stuff that I think you can use and enjoy. Thanks to Brave New Coin for being a Ledger Status partner. Go to ledgerstatus.com/BNC to check it out. Now here's the show. Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, and I am here again today with Josh Olsiewicz. We are going to discuss, are we in a bull market still, or is it a bear market? We're going to start with those easy questions, but first, hey Josh, how you doing?
Good, Brian. How's it going? Quite the drop.
It's going well. It is quite the drop. So we were looking at kind of some levels, some stuff, but let's start with where we ended the last episode, which both of us had the consensus view of bullish until proven otherwise, and proven otherwise we have been. What's the drop top to bottom? Almost 2K, right? So like 98, 9900 down to 7800 or so on the lows, 7900.
Yeah, somebody made a comment on Twitter about how like unsurprising these moves are, and I mean, I kind of agree with that as far as like the magnitude, because this stuff just happens so frequently that at this point it's like, okay, it's just another, I haven't even thought about a $2,000, whatever it is, drop. It's not like I'm saying like it was out of the blue or out of the question, but it was definitely just like another day, like a Tuesday, you know?
Another day in paradise.
Another comparison, like, you know, that Saudi Aramco thing, the world's oil supply was attacked and it only dropped 15%.
Yeah.
So yeah. To see us drop, like to see ETH drop, what, 34% or whatever it was, just absolutely get schlobberknockered. It's unsurprising, but at the same time, it's just still so crazy, you know, like any other market, you'd just be like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah. You know, I just was listening to a podcast and I can't remember which one it is. It might've been Jesse Felder's. Whoever it was, they were talking about a book they read or something about the when the oil market was emerging. And apparently the oil market had booms and busts that were Bitcoin-esque. So like under a dollar to like $12 a barrel type of pricing in 1 year. I don't think it's that crazy for in a market that is emerging. I do think that the volatility over time will continue to go down. And even our volatility on a big day, 20% is huge, but I feel like beyond 20% is incredibly rare now with Bitcoin. And, you know, in 2013, you know, a big hack could lead to like 30 or 40%. So with a wick, whereas now a 30 or 40% drop, an exchange hack certainly would not accomplish that, you know?
Yeah. And to even to get like back to back 20% drops took like the November 2018 specifically, like I'm thinking, I don't know the full percentage of that, from 6,500 to 30 to 3,000. So what, 50% plus 54%? I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
But like that, you know, I see a lot of people comparing like this fractal to that fractal. And in my head, I'm thinking, well, there was lots of bearish headwinds going on at the time. There was Tether problems. There was Bitfinex problems. There was a Bitcoin Cash civil war. There was miners playing around with hash rate, dumping BTC, especially at 6,500. And we know that because people looked at the wallet addresses and were like, okay, well, this is how we drop so much, you know, like the miners literally capitulated when broke 65, like that was it. So I'm not saying that now, but it doesn't mean obviously we can't just continue to go to what's 50% from here, 3,500.
Yeah.
4,000. Like it sounds crazy to me, but I just don't see how it happened. Like,
yeah,
it can happen over time. Like back to our bullish bearish question. Like I think we're definitely in a bear market now. We're below the daily cloud, below the 100 or 200 EMA on the daily, below the weekly 20 SMA. So as far as the litmus test in a vacuum, like we cliffed on all these things on the high time frames, and you know, we just zoomed right past the 200.
Yeah, I think the initial day's response, we actually responded off of the 200-day simple moving average, which is my personal barometer of bull and bear in Bitcoin because it has been so good over time. And the fact that we dropped below it we hovered over it for the next daily, and then yesterday we dropped below it. And today it's not like we're like speeding our way back. So that's what's concerning to me. Like, I think these grinding bottoms are a little more rare. It's possible still, but the likelihood in my mind would be that we may have a little further to go, and I just got to play it safe, kind of wait on the next round of consolidation. But I would agree with you on the daily time frame. That would be a bearish indicator for sure. The weekly is the one to me that we really didn't break below the 20-week moving average the entire prior bull market ever since the September 2015 region when we broke above that. After that, we held it on a weekly basis except for July 2016. We wicked below it. But then the 20-week SMA was where we bounced over and over and over again. And what we've done this time is we consolidated right to it, and then this weekly broke drastically below it. And I think what worries me there is the 20 and the 200 on the weekly basis got really far apart because of how quickly we went from bottom to top, because we went from whatever, you know, 3,100 to 13,900. And I think it made that 20-week move so quickly that now we've broken down under it. Historically, that's measured basically the top of the market for at least a while. And if that's going to be different this time, then I think maybe we just range here for a while. So like maybe we've set the top for the year and now we're due to consolidate for an extended period of time. I don't think that's the worst thing in the world, other than it would mean that it's a time for a really boring crypto market and an opportunity to accumulate. But where is that accumulation? You know, that's the big question. Do we accumulate at like 5K or at 7 or what before we make another run back up towards trying to capture the all-time high? We pretty definitively lost the attempt to do so. And I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. I was shook by the fact that we might have an all-time high in 2019. Like, it was crazy to me.
Yeah.
I don't think this is like a super unhealthy market reaction or anything. I just have to take it slow in terms of just trying to discern what do I think the bottom is. Do I think there's room to make a trade there? Because the problem with these Bitcoin moves that are really fast is if you don't like get out ahead of time, or if you're like not prepared to buy that dip, whatever, like it's hard to trade it sometimes when the moves happen over the course of an hour, like 50% of the move occurs or more. So for me, it's trying to decide how do you want to approach from here on out. Like, do I want to try to risk off further and have more cash on the sidelines? Do I want to start dollar cost averaging to further my investment in crypto? Those types of things.
Yeah, when we broke the daily cloud on the daily candle, I tweeted something out like, you know, it was when we broke
9,400.
It was 96 because we broke the fractal, the Williams fractal as well. This is like an intraday move. So like you're saying, I tweeted that out because I was like, okay, you know, everyone who was bearish is finally right. We're breaking down all these levels. We're below the cloud now. And for me, like to get mega short, I was waiting for a close below the cloud on the daily. But that was the candle, like where we dropped the rest of the move, you know, to 80, 81, 82, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like it was that same day. So you're right. It's like really tough. You have to really be sniper-like, really sure of what you're doing as far as entries and exits are concerned.
Yeah.
And as far as consolidation, like the VPVR, the volume profile stuff, like there's plenty of history in this zone for us to chill.
Oh, this is actually because we consolidated here in the spring. So from like May until through June, this is one of the highest volume nodes. If you look at like a volume profile, so people that don't watch this, it's the thing on the right hand side of the chart where volume spikes out. So it's the volume at a specific price. This was one of the most active levels over the past couple years. And I'd been pointing at 7950 often in terms of what I might look for in a drop. The problem is it was when we had consolidated much less. So the degree of consolidation we had, the measured move, if you go the full distance of that triangle, is actually quite a bit steeper than 7950 versus if we had had a drop much earlier and like kind of V-bottomed down. So that's what makes it a little bit tougher of a level. But yeah, there's tons of volume interest at this level for sure.
Yeah, so VPVR is just the idea is anyway that anything that was support is now resistance. Anything that's resistance is now support. And that if there was buying interest or selling interest at a previous time period, there'd be that renewed buying, selling interest again at a current level, which is one reason why I had said that 6,500 was going to be such crazy resistance, and then it turned out to be absolutely nothing.
Like butter. Yeah, so I mean, if we keep going down, it'll be really interesting if we go through it like butter on the way back down, which I think would really, really mess with people's heads. Like if we did have a V bottom, but what if that V bottom was back at like the 5,300-5,400 level where we consolidated before knifing through 6,400? That would be an interesting place to wick down to me if we go full bearish, because that's also closer to a retest of the 200 week moving average, which has marked the bottom of both major bear markets in Bitcoin ever.
And I guess the last thing, as far as like, are we bull bear, like the 5,200 cross on the daily, so death cross, golden cross, that sort of thing, that hasn't happened yet. We're still above the bands on the weekly. 76 is the bottom of the band on the weekly, so those haven't expanded yet, which kind of says like we have plenty of room to keep going down if we want to. The yearly pivot's at 80 or 81, so we're basically like sitting at it or just below it now. Yeah, I don't know. And to see like futures, for those of you who were like watching it as it was dropping, the futures negative premium or backwardation, whatever you want to say, got really massive towards the bottom of that.
Or $500.
Yeah. I don't know what the percentage that was, but to get that so quickly on one day is pretty rare for even for Bitcoin. Like that just tells me that there were so many people who were overly leveraged long. There were so many stops, obviously, at that level, 94, 96. And ETH, in a vacuum, I think ETH goes back to 250, 300, whatever. But the fact that Bitcoin broke down the way it did, like ETH doesn't have a choice. You know, it's the slave to the master here.
Yeah. So let's briefly, I want to go over the futures concept. Because a lot of the volume is happening on futures and perpetual swaps. But perpetual swaps on BitMEX, Deribit, elsewhere, those are a live price reaction. But futures are like what CME trades and elsewhere. But then there's like quarterly futures, both on CME and Deribit and BitMEX. But there's this idea that is important to understand of contango versus backwardation. And if you expect the price to go up in the future, then the futures price, meaning it expires, say, a quarter or say 6 months out from now, contango is where that price is higher than the current available price of the asset, whereas backwardation means it's cheaper. So it's pretty normal in a trending environment like what Bitcoin was in for the futures price to be higher, which was true. I think one of the most extreme examples was Deribit, where it was like it went from something like $300 higher in the futures contract. So it was in contango, and it went all the way to a backwardation curve in that one day, like you said. So yeah, for
it was in a few hours even.
Yeah. So for the premium, to go from, you know, whatever, $300 worth of contango to $100 plus of backwardation, that's an example of kind of an overreaction of market sentiment. So people went from quite bullish to incredibly bearish near instantaneously.
Right. And not only that, but the funding rates were super negative very quickly. Like they were maxed out on Deribit for a long time.
Meaning so that people were being paid to be long now.
Right. So that means shorts were paying longs at that point. So it just goes to show you like, yeah, people really piled in really quick. A lot of stops got hit. And just for the record, I don't think any of these triangles were ever descending. Okay. That's just me. You can flame me all you want, Johnny. Johnny and Peter. Johnny, Peter, Paul, Mary, Joe, whatever.
Shout out to my buddy, Johnny Mo Trades. He was extremely bearish and he was in. He made a nice little trade on the breakdown. But even he, I was talking to him and I don't think he'd bother or be bothered by me sharing. Like he was surprised by how rapid the move was. Like he was expecting more of a retest of the breakdown. That's one of the funny things with Bitcoin though, is like when it goes, it goes. My strategy throughout this was to say like I wanted to try to make some trades to buy the dip if that was what happened, to seek strength rather than to just outright short it on the consolidation itself. The first attempt I made, I was so quickly out because it was when it was like 8,700, 8,800, because I just thought people would kind of preempt a little bit more and start to buy. So I was watching low time frames and just watching the tape. And man, I was out of that so fast. And then I tried it again, but it was from a little below 8K. And I think we bounced up to like 8,600, 8,700. So I was able to pick up a scalp of like $500 or whatever pretty easily on that one. But on the whole, it just was so risky being in because Bitcoin will move so fast whenever these big moves occur. It was totally a scalp and not like my forever dip buy type of moment. So still seeking that, still waiting on the right opportunity. I don't hate this level. By far, for me, the biggest thing I do dislike about it is how good the 200-day moving average has been and the fact that we went down and we sliced right through it and now we're on the underside. That 200-day moving average around 8,300 to me is going to have to be resistance now. It's just how the game's got to be played. But on the pattern side of things, I would love to see a test back up to like 8,800, 8,900 because like you said, with the volume profile, it's the exact same thing. We consolidated, we created that volume profile. So now it should be resistance as we move up.
I was just checking the daily band. I think we're actually farther out of the daily bands now than we were in November 2018.
When we dropped down from 6K.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the Bollinger bandwidth. The percent B is what it is.
Yeah.
So we are just about equal to what we were on November
20th.
14th, 15th, something like that.
Oh, the first breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for people that are watching this, one of the you know, metrics to look at would be, hey, what did we do last time we moved like this? We consolidated for less time this time than we did in 2018. But when we broke down from 6K, we spent a few days dinking around after the first day's breakdown. And then we went, that happened at maybe 5,500. And then we didn't bottom until 3,100. So there was another like 40% drop. So to do the same here, it would be equivalent to like going down to in the 5K range. That's what I would expect. I would expect if we go like full bear market, we'd end up ranging around 5K again. If we make a full like measured move off of this and go all the way down, whole new bear market, another year of pain, who knows what altcoins do during all of that. Like that's kind of worst case scenario, I guess, for overall market sentiment. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree. And just comparing like last time we had like a multi-day bear flag that broke down. This time we had like a day bear flag that broke down. It's like similar sort of stuff, but...
But everything's moving faster this time.
Yeah, everything's moving faster, which is good because that usually means that the bearish momentum weakens quicker. Whereas before we kind of dropped, consolidated, dropped again. Like, and that was part of the miners capitulating as well, like just based on blockchain, on-chain data.
Yeah, and miners are not really showing any sign of capitulation here.
I don't see the data to support that, but that doesn't mean they won't, like, you know, if we drop below 79, for instance, and they're like, okay, that's, you know, that's the magic number.
Let's talk about that for a second. So hash rates are up, which means it's harder to get paid for mining. So the cost of mining is therefore up because of that, because you earn less Bitcoin doing so. That said, in the last bear market, people weren't really totally losing their shirts until it was below 5 and 6K. And then it was a matter of survival of the fittest in that 3 to 4K range when we started seeing those miners go belly up. So with a harder hash rate, it being difficult for miners, that calculation is going to change. It's a dynamic thing. It's not like, oh yeah, we're profitable at 5K and we're not profitable at 4K or something like that, right? So they may, if price goes to 6K, but hash rate still is very high, like they may still be losing money because the hash rate's higher, correct?
Right. Their break-even price is different. The profitability is different. Or even have a predicted plus 6% difficulty increase on the next difficulty adjustment. So that just says...
Miners are basically doubling down.
People are still adding... Excuse me. People are still adding hash rate to the network, which is different than last time. And in November, we had a string of negative difficulty adjustments immediately following the breakdown. On 11/16, it was negative 7. December 3rd, negative 15. December 18th, negative 10. So we've yet to see the minor capitulation. So
yeah. It also means that if they're okay with this, it means they were living on the hog basically June and beyond all that time, like 8K up to 14K. They were very happy probably mining during that time. So
yeah, either you're still adding because you feel like you have to and that you just purchased like a bunch of ASICs and I don't know, like people like to think miners are like super rational people who have this, like, you know, they have massive overhead, they have electricity, but if you prepaid for electricity and you bought the ASICs already. Like, you're going to keep mining, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
You're sort of price agnostic at that point because your losses are locked in, or your costs are locked in, rather.
Yeah, and there are various hedging strategies. Oftentimes, the people who are most likely to be, the producers, not the speculators, in a futures market, it makes a lot of sense if a miner is extremely happy with 10 or 12K Bitcoin, they would have been the ones providing sell pressure up there from a futures perspective, and they basically lock in their ability to do what they do at the same price. So they would have been hurt if we go to 14 or 15K, but hey, if they're making 50% profits at 12K, then they'll probably do it all day long, be totally happy with that.
Right, so they'll head short while they're mining, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And we saw that even, I can't remember what month it was, if it was June or July, there was a massive short closed, like basically at the top, like the worst possible place.
And, yeah, but that didn't make sense to me because that was the opposite of what you would have wanted.
Right. But that just says like maybe that was a miner who,
made the wrong call
at the top.
Yeah. So they capitulated their short that they probably put on at like 5K. So,
or they were neutral or whatever at that point. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows what exactly they were doing, but this was on Bitfinex and they closed a short of like 25,000 Bitcoin or something.
Yeah, it was big.
It was a lot. It was
any of that now.
It was like half the short interest on Bitfinex or something.
Yeah, and that could also be just like, Bitfinex being Bitfinex, who knows, but I think the point of this entire conversation is like comparing, we can compare it all we want to 2018. We're not seeing a lot of the stuff that we saw then, especially from the mining realm.
Yeah. The mining dynamic is just that. It's dynamic. So it's not going to be the exact same reaction to market forces that we saw in 2018.
And part of that could be we're adding hash rate basically as we were going down sideways throughout 2018. And then we broke a level and they had to that was it. That was their number, I guess. But the difference now is, like you said, they were living on the hog. Mining profitability is up-ish, depending on hash rate, again, dynamic, like you're saying. So now I think it would have to go a lot lower just because price would have to go a lot lower, But whereas before, 6,500 was closer to break even for a lot of people. That's my guess anyway.
Yeah. Another fractal that I find interesting is, the December to April bottom consolidation. And when we broke up, it was from 4,100 and it was from the weekly Bollinger Band midline or the 20 SMA. And then we shot up higher than people expected. We consolidated and then we went on a big run. A lot of folks that I like and respect have compared that to what we're seeing now, that basically we're seeing the inverse of what we had December through April, a multi-month consolidation, a breakdown from the 20-week SMA, and we've had our first spike down, so now we're due for some sideways until we then determine are we going to have another leg down or not. I actually really like that. From a strategy perspective, if someone was trading this and they have access to do so, one of the things you could trade would be to short volatility, meaning if you have access to an options platform, you may be a net seller of the premium itself. So that would be one way that you might say you want to try to seek additional Bitcoin is by putting that Bitcoin out there and selling people options. I think typically after these gigantic moves, that's a pretty good strategy, unless the move just kind of gets out of hand. Then you could face potentially humongous risks. but yeah, that's definitely one of the strategies that I would look into if I was seeking options trades with crypto.
And another variable to consider in all of this is that we're at the last week of a quarter. And that's different than 2018. Certainly, it was November versus the end of December. If we're trying to compare timing, so what role did quarterly rollover have in all this? As far as people wanting to put on massive long positions towards the end of a quarter versus rolling out of their long positions from April, if they were long from April or later, that would be that quarter.
Yeah.
Biannual, whatever it is. There's a lot of weirdness with the timing of this.
This is obviously biased towards the people that I follow in legacy markets. But pretty much everybody I follow on the legacy side of things when they looked at this Bitcoin consolidation, it was like universally bullish bias. Like I didn't see anybody from the legacy market looking at this being like, oh yeah, that thing's gonna just tank, which I find hilarious in its own way.
I mean, Peter Brandt, very early on the bearishness for Peter Brandt. My problem with being early and not confident is that doesn't help you trading. like I'd much rather be here trading it as it happens and be like, okay. He was bearish. The Rolf Paul guy, he was bullish.
That's the Real Vision guy who's been making the rounds recently.
And I mean, Tom Lee's always bullish, but you know, that's Tom Lee. But the funny thing is, like, the macro stuff is just all over the map, like the Trump impeachment stuff, whether you're political or not, like that's gonna have some effect on something, right?
So the number one macro thing I've been noticing, and it's a shame because I didn't put it in my like group of charts where I was doing correlations, but dollar strength is very, very high right now. Like the DXY is over 99. Broke out pretty clearly, and it's just like trending consistently. And I think the experts that I watch, they talk about how anything over 98.50 was really just a breakout up that was going to put stresses on things like growth stocks and potentially on, you know, like commodity resources like gold, silver, Bitcoin. And definitely seeing that play out right now where, you know, metals are down, markets are down, dollar is up. And I think that's an interesting one to watch. I wish that I'd concluded that in my analysis for correlations. I just wasn't thinking about it at the time. But I think there's probably something to it because the dollar being that strong, it's like Trump's worst nightmare. From a being competitive standpoint, it's harder when from an exports perspective, when your currency is really strong. So the dip just continuously getting bought on DXY and just grinding up definitely puts a strain on things. And if it really, really breaks out, like there's this diagonal on DXY that goes back to a wick in May 2016, but more so it creates, there's a high from October 2017 before it made its final low, but then the diagonal that creates going up has lasted for years, and we've touched it, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times now. If we break above that, it's like DXY all-time highs above 103, 104. Massive, massive problems in terms of dollar liquidity for markets and probably further bearish headwinds for commodities. I would find that really interesting to see how it plays out. I've been watching that for a long time. It's basically a big channel.
And it's definitely, like, if you look at DXY, it was in like this rising wedge clamp thing for a long time. And even still, like, if you look at RSI on the weekly, it's just a bear div since July 2018. Like, it's still bear diving, and it just doesn't matter. And Euro USD is the opposite. Like, it's still bull diving in this falling wedge, and it just doesn't matter. I agree. Like, I saw someone tweeting about this today, how Dixie's breaking out or whatever. And I agree that it's not bullish for Bitcoin, certainly.
Yeah. One of the big conversations in the global macro market or whatever has long been that a dollar shortage, dollar liquidity problems globally would put significant potential headwinds kind of across the board. It's super interesting to me. There's a case for if the dollar just rockets up that it would cause kind of mayhem all over the place. So something I want to watch. Like all those correlations, they're really hard to justify. Like, it's really pretty tough to, I don't know, like take too many assumptions from that and just act like it's truth. Sometimes they tend to shift and they, you know, change shape right underneath you. Makes it hard as well. But it's definitely one that I want to watch and see what happens.
Whether you're an enterprise fund manager or a retail trader, buying and selling cryptocurrencies successfully requires price discovery you can rely on. Brave New Coin's liquid indices provide trusted US dollar prices for Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Ripple. Featuring end-of-day or intraday outputs, you can count on the BLX, ELX, and XRPLX for accurate US dollar pricing for smart contract oracles, settlement price discovery, net asset valuation, and performance analysis. Visit BraveNewCoin.com to find out more.
Or the Fed or the PBOC could just like inject billions of dollars overnight and like change the entire course of everything.
And they've been, what's been funny is they've been doing that.
Yeah, they have. They literally like
this,
have.
This repo market thing, I don't know if you keep up with that, but it's a bit another big conversation from a macro perspective where there's been several times where they've pumped like $75 billion into the market overnight because there's this dislocation between available funds and lending, and it's stuff that's hard for me to explain, but because I don't understand it well enough. But billions of dollars going into the market for the purpose of liquidity because there's a liquidity squeeze. And a lot of people think that the Fed just doesn't know what's going on. I literally heard one person describe it as there was a rumor that someone had left the Fed and just kind of forgotten that something needed to be addressed, and that's why it was causing this problem, which required, you know, $100 billion plus going into the market. I'm like, what? Are we serious? Like, because Susie left the Fed that we got to put $100 billion into the market? Or is that really what someone's talking about right now? Like, how terrifying is that?
Yeah, that's pretty terrifying. Just today in the Wall Street Journal, I guess it was yesterday at this point, but they said that the Fed injected $110 billion on Thursday for the repo lending market.
And it's not the first time. It's not the first one. Like, it's been going on a lot over the course of the last week or two. So maybe it's the type of thing that we look back on and we're like, wow, this was happening. And like, no one was freaking out near enough. it's the big, you know, catalyst. I don't know. We shall see.
And again, like back to legacy stuff, like if people talk about this, like Bitcoin's risk on, risk off, hedge, whatever. But at the end of the day, when SPX is down, so is Bitcoin. So if we're having turmoil in legacy US markets, it's just not good for crypto, period. Like, we can want it to be a risk off hedge all we want, but seeing all this nonsense going on, even today with like Chinese stocks and US markets and US investors and Chinese blah, blah, blah. Like, all this stuff just isn't good for for U.S. Investing at all, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we are either in a repeat of like the 2015-2016 state of things from a stock market perspective. And if people aren't aware, like some people called it like an earnings recession or something like that. But we had these drops and everybody was like, this is the end. We're ready for a big bear market. And then we just exploded out of that. That coincided with, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, election stuff, tax cuts, who knows what. Point is, we went up instead of down. From a long-term charts perspective, like when I'm looking at weekly, monthly, quarterly charts of these indexes, it looks just like it did then. And the outcome is very similar. Like, we're going to make a resolution for global or for US equity markets. It's just hard to know, like, is it going to be down and like boom, here comes a big bear market, whether it's whether it coincides with a recession or not, I don't know, but there's going to be a resolution of this market after going not really making significant new all-time highs for a year and a half. There's going to be something that happens and we're either going to pump like mad and all these valuations are going to even get more crazy, or we're going to go way down, like have a large, large dip. So yeah, it's crazy. There's just lots of uncertainty in the market. I guess that's how I would settle it. Not to mention all this impeachment stuff. And this is not a political podcast. I do not intend to get into it, but it's just another variable in the global landscape. And we're still trying to figure out how the heck does Bitcoin fit into all this?
Yeah, I actually had a few non-US people asking me, like, what are the rules for impeachment as far as, you know, because this stuff affects the market, right? So
right.
People are paying attention. And yeah, so they need 218 votes in the House. Then they need whatever, how many votes in the Senate. I don't think
and impeachment,
they need in the Senate.
Well, first of all, it's not, there's not an impeachment process going on. There's like some initial inquiry.
Yeah, some stuff. Probing.
Yeah, there's probing. But then like you have to go through the whole process. Even if he was for some reason impeached, it doesn't mean he's out of office. Like,
right.
Basically, there's no way this is happening until the end of his term anyway. So I think it's kind of a too much hype around impeachment type of deal, personally.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, the left mainstream media is definitely excited about it, understandably. But
you could probably just fade that from a market impact perspective. But what we are continuing to see is like the market lives and dies off of Trump tweets, China headlines, all this bull crap.
Yeah.
And it just, those are like scary market things in my mind. It's just like too much dumb stuff is affecting the market, which insinuates to me that the market is too sensitive and therefore a bit perilous.
Yeah, I agree. And talking about dumb stuff, you know, DeFi, Brian.
Yeah, talk to me about DeFi. We've went down a rabbit hole there of legacy. So talk to me about
another
DeFi.
Reason that ETH dropped way harder than Bitcoin did is because there were some DeFi liquidations. You know, 3.2 million isn't like a lot in the grand scheme of things.
3 million worth of DeFi liquidations.
So there was this thing I'm specifically referring to is there was a CDP that got liquidated. 3.2 million DAI. Now,
what's
I don't know
CDP?
The exact. So CDP is a collateralized debt product. No.
Okay.
What does it stand for on MakerDAI? I'm blanking.
It's a loan.
It's a loan and it has collateral. And if you're over leveraged on the loan, it gets margin called. So they sell it openly on the market. You can increase your collateral or decrease your collateral to a certain percentage, depending on, you know, how we are price-wise away from your open price. Anyway, but the point is, like, a large CDP got liquidated. So that just added the fuel to the fire as far as the bearishness the other day, you know. And we're sort of, if you look at, like, the next zone of liquidations, it's between 100 and 150.
For
so
Ethereum.
If Ethereum goes to 150,
I mean,
it's going to be real interesting
right now.
Yeah, I know. But a lot of liquidations are sitting between 100 and 150. And that's not to say, like, you know, you can always add ETH to the CDP and the liquidation goes down. For some of these, they're super well managed, but for some of them, they aren't. And you're just, if you're not quick enough and the market just goes against you, that's it, you know, like you just get liquidated. And then that's sold. I don't know the exact process. I meant to look this up the other day. The exact process of how like the CDPs get liquidated, if it's spread out on like IDAX and Bancor and Bitstamp, like I don't know exactly where they sell it, but yeah, that's just something else interesting to consider. If we
Ethereum just looks awful.
Really? Well, Ethereum looks way better than Bitcoin does here.
Well, it's at a significant level, so your risk reward is good.
Right. Like, it's either it bounces or it's dead. Like, it's really that
that's,
simple for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, that's what I've said. Like, it gives credit to your 100 to 150 number because, I mean, it's basically back at the consolidation area before the breakout. So it's already the Bitcoin equivalent of like 4 to 5K. Like, that's where it is right now.
Yeah, it's deja vu. I mean, if you longed. The difference is that we had a falling wedge in going into that. But, you know, if you longed 161 before, like, guess what? We're right there again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's ugly. This is.
Yeah, it is. It is. Like, high time frame is ugly, but low time frame looks way better than Bitcoin does. Even ETH BTC, all the BTC pairs actually look decent for a massive, yeah, like, edge to edge trade.
Yeah.
CRX, all the XRP, you know, all these, like, completely shitty shit coins. Look,
yeah,
really
alts,
good.
Charlie. Alts have their moment. They need to take advantage. And if they can't do it while Bitcoin is on the struggle bus, then they're not going to be able to do it, in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I can't see Joe Public, like, dumping money into alts right now. Just, you know, if legacy is wishy-washy bearish, and if Bitcoin is wishy-washy bearish, what kind of people are, like, rushing to buy alts right now? You know?
Well, I mean, you've got crypto whales, Josh. Crypto whales. I do think so. Here's the case, I guess. One, there's not enough Bitcoin to spread around to all the various shitcoins that exist in my mind. So I do think these moves can be isolated. But I think there's enough Bitcoin in the world where if you don't think your easy money is going to be able to come from Bitcoin, then alts should move. I think that consolidation, it was a natural place, like midway through that consolidation, for alts to move. They really didn't do it, and that was very bad. They really waited until right before Bitcoin crapped its pants to try to have any bullish action whatsoever. Now they've all broken down from that. But now it's also decisively that, like, it's going to take a minute for Bitcoin to go wild or whatever. So therefore, it gives another opportunity for altcoins, particularly on a Bitcoin pair, to have some opportunity. So this is kind of a maximum opportunity zone for altcoins. Relative to Bitcoin, most of them, or the best of them, recovered quickly, is I guess the way I would say it. So that is promising for potential altcoin gains. Whether they beat the dollar or not, I have no idea. But if you play them relative to Bitcoin, if your goal is to earn more Bitcoin, then there is opportunity. So I think that there's enough people with enough Bitcoin to be incentivized to help spur those markets along. It's a matter of seeing which ones are going to do what. And right now, there are some that are really sad stories. I mean, our poor Algorand, remember when we talked about it? It's all the way down to like 17 or 18 cents now. I mean, poor guys.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch anything that was newly listed. Like anything that's been under a year of listing is just like, ugh. But and that's not to say like all alts look great. Like EOS actually looks pretty bad for a high cap, EOS BTC. But to me, like the best ones are ETH BTC, XRP BTC, Stellar BTC. BNB actually looks pretty awful. It's got a multi-day bull div on the daily here, though.
You know, going back to my short thesis, it hit take profit. My paper trade BNB short thesis that I talked about, I put it on Twitter. But my take profit hit on the dollar pair. Too bad I didn't have an opportunity to actually trade that because it would have been my best trade of the year.
It blew through the previous all-time high, BNB BTC.
Oh, yeah.
And now
it's in nasty land.
Now it's working on the measured move from the previous bearish consolidation. But yeah, no, it's just been marched down.
But that's not the case for all exchange tokens, Josh.
No, it's not. And I'm not touching any of them. But that's BNB for you.
That's BNB. A giant.
But yeah, some alts look good. Some look not so good. LTC BTC, for example. I don't think looks anywhere near as good as everything else does. No, looks better than EOS and Zeke certainly, but yeah.
Zeke certainly.
How about that backed launch though?
How about that backed launch? Yeah, let's.
Can I just say this? Let me re-interrupt you and just say how much of a non-narrative it is that backed dumped or that you know the announcement of backed to the news has caused this dump. Like that has nothing to do with this whatsoever. So it's just like the stupidest narrative I've seen in the past 2 years to me. It's like the announcement was the announcement months ago, and we are clearly just consolidating at the end of a quarter TA wise. That could have gone either way. Definitely leaning bearish towards the end, but I don't know. Like backed is just such a non-factor, even just based on the volume. And you can say like, oh, the volume shows that there's no interest, which is bearish. But, you know, none of this stuff's going to be amazing day one. CME and SIBO were amazing day one because they came out at the literal top all-time high of the market. Like percentage-wise, they were like 5% of the total daily volume. I looked at this the other day. They were like 5%. They're a separate market, but if you compared like CME, SIBO volume on the day they launched, it was like 5%. Compared to like backed, it's like 0.05%. But it's a completely different market, you know, than we were in like December, January 2018.
Anyway, yeah, I agree with that.
Rant. That's my backed rant.
So I would say this is back's fault from a PR perspective, because there are people interested in owning Bitcoin and taking a position in Bitcoin. And operationally and PR-wise, they should have had some of those people willing to take a move like on the initial trades on BAC's platform so that it's not, you don't point at it a day later and it's like, oh, there's been 100 Bitcoin traded here because they didn't control the narrative very well. I don't think it matters at all. In terms of long term, I think backed will probably become very popular. It's got a lot of appeal for a variety of reasons. I'm not their spokesperson, but because of who owns it, because of the way it's managed, etc., I think it will have a significant appeal and people will trade there. I think that they didn't really do a good job of bringing those people on quickly and having them there day one, ready to go. Show some cool numbers, that kind of stuff. And I think they could have probably done that had they planned that a little better. Not that that's their responsibility, not that it'll affect the long term, but it does provide for a stupid narrative for people to include in their articles, which is fine. It's their right to do. I agree with you. I don't think it was a thing, but selling the news is often, you know, what people want to use as their narrative anyway. So they can now do it. And everybody did.
Literally everybody did. I mean, if you know nothing about anything and you see like 1 + 1 = and you think it equals 2, like then yes, you're going to write an article like this day, this price, you know, whatever. It's fine. I get it. But comparing it to the VanEck thing real quick, the 144A, not ETF, zombie ETF, ETF.
Yeah.
The difference here for me is that the backed stuff, as far as I am aware, like people had access to that. The legacy people like who are already connected with ICE or whatever, there wasn't any extra like hoops they had to like jump through. to like join that market. Whereas the 144A is like you have to be a registered something something, and that takes time and whatever.
Yeah, they have to go do
so
stuff.
I can understand the lagging interest on the 144A side, but the backside, that's the one thing I will agree with. Like if people want it now, they can get it because it's on brokerage, whatever, you know, it's like TD Ameritrade, right? Or you just like you do whatever you want, buy any stock you want. So if people are connected or if their brokers are connected to ICE or whatever, it should be fine. So there are definitely ways to take advantage of it now for people. And one other thing I haven't looked at was the GBTC premium, which I expect to continue to go to zero. It was like 33% the other day, but there's no way that's going to last. Just because why would you buy GBTC when you can stuff buy on Bakkt? VanEck
or Bakkt.
VanEck Bakkt. I mean, the difference is like the sizing of the contracts and whatever. But
are we shorting Barry here?
You can't not short GBTC relative. It's like the GBTC Bakkt pair, you know, if that was a pair.
Yeah.
And we definitely go long back.
It's a perfect ARB.
Right. It's a massive, and it's a massive ARB just because the difference right now between even BTC spot and GBTC, the premium is like 20-30%, whatever it is, which is just gross.
All right. I just saw something massively bullish. Got to say it.
Okay.
Daily RSI right now is around 20. November 2018, it went way below that, which was a record low RSI in like any kind of recent year since like 2014, 2013. Every time that I can see that we got anywhere close to this level of RSI, there was a massive rebound price-wise off of it. And usually, especially when the market was trending up broadly, it marked like a bottom, like August 2015, January 2016, July 2016. All of those were major, major bottoms, and we are at that type of RSI level. And it is like a significant level below the normal like RSI is bottomed out type of levels, which are typically like 27, 28, which is just kind of just oversold from 30. This is a spike way below that. And when you go back and you analyze the other times RSI got that low, it insinuates that we are just too oversold. Got to go up. Up is the only option. Let's go ahead and call it.
It certainly feels oversold in the near term, for sure. And one other thing to look at is the macro pitchfork, which a lot of people don't like, but I love it.
Including me.
It's just like, how can you argue with it, you know? It reminds me of all the...
I can argue with it because it spent just about as much time out of it as in it.
Okay, whatever. But all of the log stuff, you look at anybody's log, like this flow to whatever ratio.
Yeah.
That chart going around. All that stuff is the exact same. Like it's the exact same. It's just a log versus linear, you know. Anyway, point is this current price is the bottom of the pitchfork, the very bottom.
I like that. Maybe I like this. I'll change my tune. No, I'm just saying, unless we go like at record levels of RSI to match November 2018, which was an incredibly record-sized oversold scenario, then if we did not, then if we're not at the bottom, we're close to it. And it's an opportunity for buyers to show up. I'd put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I said, like we were saying earlier, like there isn't the, yes, it's bearish. Yes, the trend is now bearish, but there isn't the bearish strength, the bearish headwinds from November as far as the lingering, you know, non-TA things going on right now. I'd certainly be more bearish if miners were capitulating, which may still happen if we go lower, definitely, based on the hash rate. And that's the other thing, that hash rate story. Oh my God, such a non-story. Like anybody who's paid attention to hash rate at all realizes that it goes all over the place in an intraday level. And like there are a bunch of people coming out saying like it's an estimate, we don't really know the actual hash rate, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, duh. the only thing that matters is difficulty. And when that adjusts, like, you know, that's when it locks in, right? But in between that, like it's just an estimate up and down. So I don't know. It's just super funny. Just the stuff that blows up out of nothing, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the story. So you say we are technically in a bear market, but you don't necessarily think it'll be long lived. Is that the way to say it?
I'll put it like this. If we go to 6.5 and we break 6.5, then, you know, things are going to get real ugly. it's kind of like ETH sitting at 161, Brian, you know? It's like, if it goes lower, it's just over, you know? So that's kind of where I am. Like, if we break 6.5, it's just over. Obviously, 6.5 from 8 is a pretty big drop. What is that, another 20%? 15, 16%, whatever it is. Yeah, I don't know. I'm a buyer. I'm in. So, you know, that's my bias. So,
and I'm going to say that mine is that I think we're going to have a whole lot of boringness for the rest of the year. So I think it's an opportunity to collect Bitcoin in whatever way you see fit, whether that's swinging altcoins, where I think there is some opportunity right now, or if it's collecting volatility premium through options, or if it's stacking sats, just depositing cash on a weekly basis. I think, you know, doing so under 7K, 8K probably will pay off for you in a multi-year time frame. So that's my personal two cents. Having
coming up next year. One last thing to compare. I saw people comparing like the Bitfinex hack in August 2016 to this dump. And the difference is that the halving happened like a month before the hack, I think. Mm-hmm. So it's a little different now, you know? Yeah. Like there isn't a like double supply shock where like, you know, that's 120K BTC gone plus like inflation down. You know, it's a little different than it is now.
Yeah. So, I saw a funny meme about the Litecoin halving. It was like halving complete. It's gone from $102 to $51. It was a price halving though. So it was unfortunate.
That was one of the best. It was one of the best, tweets I've seen all year. That and Naraj's tweet comparing, crypto to, The Matrix.
Oh, I didn't see that.
There's this one scene where he's like, I can't stand this place or something. I don't know. Like the whole it's just a perfect correlation. Anyway.
I'm logging Naraj and his umbrella. He's famous now.
He is famous. That WeWork thing just blew up right place, right time, you know?
It did. I think he got the CEO fired.
Yeah, basically.
All right. Let's leave it there. Thanks for joining me, Josh. Everybody go to ledgerstatus.com/BNC because they are coming out of beta with BNC Pro, and you can go hop on that wagon right now. Check out all of Josh's articles on Brave New Coin. Thanks to Brave New Coin for being a Ledger Status partner. Thank you, Josh, for joining me, and we will catch everybody next time.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. It's just run dry in a house of cards. I feel the breeze wound so tight I can barely